Hello, welcome to this edition of the Bearcast Blogcast. My name is Scott, joined by Matt Oper. How's it going, Matt?
It's an interesting time to be a Bearcat, that is for sure. I'm holding up well, all things considered.
Yeah, it is like a really interesting time, because like a couple weeks ago when you and Chris and myself were all talking, the guy said I wouldn't mind if Mick Cronin left to take another job, and then he like left to take another job, and now you see he's without a basketball coach as we record this. What were your initial thoughts when like he ended up like actually taking the UCLA job?
Well, it's one of those things where, you know, when you're looking from the outside in at like a relationship among friends, like a long-term relationship, a marriage, whatever, and it seems so, you know, kind and stable and just overall good from the outside, but you never really know what's going on inside, and that's I think the really key lesson here, because I mean Mick was obviously not happy at the end. I don't think that's a denigrate. You know, that's not denigrating him at all. Like he had his reasons to be unhappy. I completely get his side of the story, but like the reaction to this was like, who could have ever possibly seen this coming? It's like, well, he did flirt very heavily with UNLV a couple years ago. That should have been something of a warning sign, but you know, again, it's always clearer in hindsight than it is in the moment.
Yeah, like one of the things that Chris and I talked about like last week was like I was a lot more worried about UC not really pushing any type of extension talks like the last couple of years, because I just thought somebody would throw like a lot of money at Mick Cronin, and if like UC came any close or like agree to some of whatever he wanted, like you just mentioned with the UNLV talk, like that got him a contract extension. And then, like, all sorts of stuff ended up happening with Fifth Third Arena. Like, and then this time, like, all we heard before, like, when, like, his name started being rumored for these jobs, was, like, UC, like, basically offered him a pay cut a couple years ago. And really, there was, like, you know, really nothing coming for, like, any extension talks from the time, like, he and Jamie Dixon were rumored to be the finalists. And, like, then the longer, like, nothing happened in UCLA, like, kept, like, missing out on every coach they tried to hire. Like, kind of, by the time, like, they ended up hiring him, I wasn't really surprised. But, like, the fact he actually left, I think, was surprising, in a sense, because I don't think a lot of people really thought it would actually happen, given his ties to, like, UC and the area, for sure.
Yeah, and like, he has ties to the area, but he also, in recent years, has grown increasingly disgruntled with the way things are run with the UC Athletic Department. Like, you know, you got to remember that this is a guy who came up with the Bearcats when they were the only show in town in terms of the Athletic Department. They got all the resources, they got all the attention, they got all the love. That is not the Athletic Department that we have at the moment. The football program is a major factor for how this for the athletic department and will continue to be for the foreseeable future, and like that kind of change in mentality with the administration, I don't think he ever fully bought into that, or you know, was happy with it, or like there's no doubt that he understood it, but I don't think he was ever happy with it, and he made his discontentment known with the state of affairs. But, like, there's just no getting around that for this university to make the step, you know, make the move to the next level, to become a member of a power conference, football has to be good. And football has to have the resources. Because if they don't, it doesn't matter what your basketball program does.
Yeah, that's just the reality nowadays. It's like, if your football program is, like, irrelevant, unless, like, you're Kansas or even, like, Kentucky. like, nobody really, I don't know, it seems like you don't really get, like, the ton of the other buzz. It's like Iowa State, like, for example, has gotten much more buzz with their football program being good than their basketball program being good lately. It's like, just, like, where college sports has seemed to have swung so hard lately. Even, like, places like Houston, like, they went out and, like, made a gigantic buzz, like, in football before, like, they... It seemed like they really stepped up their basketball program. It's just like, especially in like the AAC, where like almost all of your major exposure seems like comes from the football side of things.
Yeah, and like, it's a good basketball league, but there's no denying that this is a better football conference than a basketball conference. It just is. That's why all the root of all the disgruntled UConn fans at the moment is that this is a conference that clearly prioritizes football success more than basketball success. That doesn't mean that they're not trying to be good at both. It's just, it's easier to succeed in football with the geographical footprint of this conference than it is to succeed in basketball.
And like, the whole subplot of like most of these teams don't want to be in this conference anymore. Like, ties into football, not basketball. But it's like they all want to get out because, like, they want to make all that sweet, sweet money for, like, football. And if you have, then you have to keep up with the Joneses in, like, one of these spots. And, like, that seems where, like, they kind of lost Mick Cronin, in a sense. Was, like, they weren't willing to keep up with, like, how much he would need to get paid compared to other coaches around the league and nationally. I think he was, like, out of the top 50 in highest-paid coaches, and now he's firmly back in that category. He definitely wasn't the highest-paid coach in the AAC, and he was making, what, like, $1 million less than Kelvin Sampson is now? Like, you either have to, like, rectify that, or, like, what happened just is, like, liable to happen. And, like, he ended up getting $4 million a year plus whatever else from UCLA.
Yeah, and the we don't know what was offered.
That's true.
I mean, like, I would feel pretty comfortable saying that after the last 3 years, there was almost certainly a raise in it for him. If it was – now, whether or not that raise was to the degree of the magnitude that Mick expected and wanted, I very much doubt that, just because, like, the differences in opinion between Mick – and the administration was clear. Like, Mick always wanted more. And I think by the end, Mike Bone had an opinion of, well, show us more and you'll get more. And, you know, the undercurrent of that would seem to be, like, have more success in March when it matters. And it just never happened.
Yeah, and, like, I think... Like, just, like, a little, like, a legacy talk. Like, his legacy is, like, a really twisted one at UC. Because, obviously, like, the rise of the program from when he took over. And, like, he took over at in the Valley and, like, took UC up to, like, a 31-win season last year. Like, a 20-win turnaround from when he got here. Like, a pretty gigantic extreme. But it's, like, that March, like, lack of success... Like, for him, and, like, even, like, for Bob Huggins, like, after a while, like, that's, like, you can't just keep beating the same old drum, and, like, with no success and, like, nothing major happening, and, like, expect, like, everything to be like it was in, like, the 90s, especially, like, as you said, when they're doing so many other things for football. It's, like, the whole 90s, like, they barely cared about football. And, like, everything was so geared towards basketball, and that's really changed, like, over the last, like, decade plus, ever since, like, they hired, like, Mark D'Antonio. It's, like, been the, like, more concerted push to get football up to that mainstream level, because they had a long way to go with that. And then it seemed like whatever they were doing with basketball is that it fallen to the wayside. Like, Mick Cronin was really pushing for everything. And then school just didn't seem like they were, like, as fired up about it. It's like what he like famously said he would pay for the locker rooms himself.
Yeah, and like he did a lot behind the scenes in terms of raising funds, just like Brian Kelly did during his time here at UC, where if there was something that the program needed that he felt very strongly that the program needed, he would raise the funds himself. And that's, you know, that's not ideal, to put it mildly, but like this is, I mean, it is what it is. This is an athletic department that is expected to succeed at a very high level with very limited resources relative to the people that they're competing with. And when that is your situation, like, decisions have to be made. Resource decisions have to be made that are not going to make, that are not going to be terribly popular and are going to piss off a lot of people. And, you know, I just think that Mick got to the point where he'd had enough. And I get it from his perspective, but likewise, I, like, on the other side of it, I completely get where Mike Bone's coming from. You have limited resources. You have to maximize them to the greatest of, you know, to the greatest effect. And, you know, football gives you the most bang for the buck. It really does. Because when this program is rolling, it's a money machine like this athletic department is not accustomed to. And having, you know, the new Nipper Stadium completely change their financial models and make it a much more profitable enterprise to put games on. Like, and now you also have the aspect of, you know, FC Cincinnati's playing in Nippert for another couple of years in the highest level of soccer that this country offers. And like, that's just more money coming into the athletic department, more exposure to people to come down to campus and see what has happened down there. I mean, like, I don't think you can fault the administration for the decisions that they made in terms of resource allocation, but there's no denying that the way that they went about it definitely pissed Mick off.
Yeah, like, and that was like really the main thing that really annoyed me was like it seemed like they kind of just like, I don't know, like dragged him around a little bit, like, and weren't just like willing to really push it, and like I don't really blame them for that, which kind of unlike the way like it publicly seemed like it was handled. But like they were put in a situation where it's like you either have to like pay Mick Cronin like he's like a top 25 coach, or you have to like be willing to let him go and taking that chance of like trying to rebuild the basketball program. Just like a really interesting situation to be put in. It's like I don't really know what I would have done if I was them either. Like, you mentioned earlier, it seemed like the program was, like, still going strong. But it seemed like there was a lot of, like, stagnation when it came to, like, that next level growth. Like, especially after last year, which you could be like, oh, they lost the game in the last second to, like, a team that ended was pretty good. But, like, they, like, blew a 20-point lead with the best team Mick Cronin ever had. And, like, they only made it out of the first weekend once, and, like, they only won the first game like three times. Like something like that just like is like a black mark on your program. Like, and you either have to like be making steps to like improve that, or it's like that's just how like you're labeled. And like you have to go all in on that guy who hasn't had like any like recent tournament success, or you have to be willing to let him walk. And it's like they were willing to let him walk.
Yeah, and I think, like, I'm not thrilled with the decision, but I think I'll end up being okay with it. Just because of the lack of evolution in this program in the last 5 years has been problematic. And, like, there have been, you know, changes and tweaks on the margins that have resulted in, you know, better offense overall, but there's like some of these same structural issues with how this program has approached games and has approached the season have lingered on for a very long time. You know, like every year we talk about how this team, you know, whatever team it is, they seem to be, they never seem to be playing their best basketball in March when you need to be. Whether or not that's just physical exhaustion, injury toll, whatever it is, but like it didn't happen just once. It was a recurring theme with this group for a long time. And you know, there wasn't a willingness to really make wholesale changes to the approach to the program that I think was needed. And like I've been banging the drum for a long time. Like I didn't want Mick to go. I wanted Mick to be the one to make the changes, but in retrospect, that was probably never going to happen.
Yeah, I think that's a good point as well. Saki was had really become like set and like how he wanted to run the program, like and like little tweaks that they made offensively and defensively, like that seemed to push them to like a next level, or at least a level where they work a lot more like computer, like excellent. But like that didn't really translate to when it mattered the most. It's like I know like some people were like defending the hire, like and defending Mick. It's like the media is like really the people that care about how many Sweet 16s he made. But like I think that that's kind of true, but that also like ends up like trickling down to like the fan base, and like there was a lot of like angst with people like me included, where like you just get tired of watching the same thing and watching the team lose in the same ways like year after year after year with like no seeming like backup plan, and with the recruiting not being as like high profile as it was, it seemed like this was like a weird like a really like weird like transition to whatever UC was going to be next after losing Cumberland next year, and Mick didn't stick around for it. So it'll be really interesting to see what whoever the next coach does with the Cincinnati job, because I think it's still a really good job, obviously, and like they're right at the top of this league, which is another like really interesting thing. It says how the league has been getting a lot better. We mentioned that like almost all throughout this year, and like now you're in a situation where Cincinnati, you could argue, is not the top program in the league right now, because you'd probably say it was Houston after all their recent success this year and last year, and the fact they have Kelvin Sampson back. So it'd be interesting to see like where they go, because you can slide right down the league standings pretty fast, as we've seen at some of these other places.
Yeah, and like one of the things that has been really interesting to watch over the last day or so has been I don't want to say civil war with UC fans, but there's a definite split over like between there's a group of fans that thinks that there is like Mick did nothing wrong, it could do no wrong ever. And then there is the slightly more pragmatic look at where the program is. Like Mick is good. Like I've never for once said that, you know, he's a shitty coach, he should have been gone years ago. Like he's a good coach. He is great at building a culture. He is great. He is a very good defensive coach. But there are no like nobody's perfect. Everybody's got warts. And one of the things that became apparent over the years with Mick is his in-game adjustments were not great. He was not a great in-game tactician. And that really came to bear later in the season when you're playing against the better teams. I've never once, it's not to say that I haven't thought that, you know, he coached a great game ever, because he has, but like in the biggest games, and I've never come away thinking, you know, that was a tactical masterclass from Mick. Like that thought has never occurred to me, just because that's not his skill set. And he never made any steps to remedy that in terms of who he put on his staff. Like he never got a really great just tactical mind for basketball on his staff at any point. Or if he did, he completely ignored them, because like the same game management issues, the same stagnation on offense in big moments. Like, those were hallmarks of this program under Mick, for good and for bad. Like, that's just what it is. Like, the defining characteristic of Mick's teams to me was and will be, you know, that backbreaking 5-minute stretch where you just can't even get a good look at the basket.
Yeah, and for like, a lot of the people who aren't assigned on, like, that certainly is the mark of, like, almost every single one of his teams, like, especially in the last, like, 5 or 6 years, like, when UC was hitting the tournament every single year. It's like they would hit that just backbreaking stretch where they can't score, and, like, it doesn't matter how well you defend, if you can't score, you're just, like, sunk. And that seemed like it happened this year, almost every single game they lost. And, like, that's just something he hasn't really been able to shake out of, is getting, like, the team to a consistent offensive level. Like, lately it's been, like, pretty fine, but, like, fine for UC was, like, their highest rating on KenPom was 34th. Like, that's what they maxed out as. And, like, that team was, like, still pretty good, but they lost in the second round. It's like, he could never do, like, that thing to unlock high-profile offense and consistent offense, which was, like, something like some of these other teams that play a really slow pace can do, like Michigan and, like, Texas Tech we saw this year, and Virginia, obviously, like, the kings of the slow pace. It's just, like, a decision, like, he made to commit to that style, and, like, throughout all the tweaks, like, he never really could unlock it, at least at UC. Like, maybe when he goes to UCLA, they play a little bit differently, given, like, they'll have different players. But it'd be interesting to see, like, what he does from that sense.
Well, yeah, and you mentioned Virginia, and that is the program that every UC fan and every, like, Mick defender points to. It's like, see, Virginia does it this way, and they can win that way. And they win the national championship playing the style that Tony Bennett has become, you know, renowned for. But, like, go back and watch a Virginia game. Like, actually watch them execute on the offensive end. And then go watch a UC game from the last 2-3 years. Even when UC was at their best, they did not execute on offense the way that Virginia does. Like, Virginia is a machine. They are a slow and methodical machine, but they are a machine, and they run good offense, and they have good sets, and they have good fundamentals on offense. They set good screens. They free people up the right way. And then you watch UC's offense from the last, shit, any point in the last 5 years. You will see the same thing over and over again. You'll see one person pounding the ball at the top of the key. You will see no action on the backside of the play. You'll see maybe one screen that is not particularly good because, for whatever reason, nobody in this program ever learned how to use a screen correctly. And like, that's not stuff that is player-specific. That was program-specific. That happened to everyone. Like, for 10 years, nobody knew how to use a screen. That's kind of a problem.
Yeah, and, like, offensively, like, they really were never surrounded by any shooters, like, the same way Virginia is. Like, when you think of, like, how they play, it's they shoot a ton of threes, and, like, they're almost always good at it. And UC would shoot a decent amount of threes sometimes, but they were never really good at it. And, like, it's, like, half their offense was offensive rebounding, which was, like, a strong philosophy to have, I guess. But it's, like, that's really what Mick, like, concentrated on, was, like, getting yourself in position to get those offensive rebounds and extend possessions. Not so much run, like, a crisp offense with a lot of movement and deception. But one thing you mentioned earlier, which I thought was, like, a really interesting point, it's, like, the pure, like, X's and O's in-game stuff. It's like, I would say that's Mick's biggest knock, too. Because, like, tactician-wise, it's like he's one of those guys, like, when he, like, makes his game plan, like, his game plan is normally, like, really good. Like, if you like just look at what they did to Houston in like the conference tournament final and how they played against Houston in the regular season finale, it's like they made like a clear like tactical choice of how to defend Houston in that game. Of course, like there's different circumstances around a conference tournament. But, like, Houston like never really responded in that game. And like even like the highest profile like loss he had, like how they played against Nevada, like the whole first half and most of the second half, was like he like really fucking got the team in position to lock them down. And then like what happened the last 10 minutes was the other thing you said about how like there were really no adjustments, and they didn't adjust to anything that Nevada did. And like his whole tenure, like they never adjusted to a zone defense like one time, it seemed.
Yeah, and that's really, I mean, with the Mick Cronin era, that's what I'll remember. Like, he, and we've said it like forever. Like, there are some things that Mick is really, really good at. He is great at building a culture. He is great at teaching defense. And that stuff is important. Culture matters. Like, over the long term, that stuff really does matter. That's why, even when he has had teams that were not that good, he has still managed to drag them to 25 wins in the tournament every single year. And that's really incredible. But, like, you can... Like, it is possible for people to hold two thoughts in their head at the same time. It is possible to acknowledge that Mick did all this good while saying he was not a great in-game coach and never took steps to remedy that, never took steps to find somebody who could fill in the gaps that he had. And that's really where the frustration has always been with Mick, is that, yeah, he does certain things good and you know, like, he is a good coach. But there are things on the margin that he just never addressed, and those things never change with this program. Like, you know, they still play second-shot offense in an era where three-point shooting is more plentiful than ever, and it's easier to find shooters than ever. You know, the hardest thing to find right now is a traditional big man who's good with his back to the basket. And that's really what Mick needs for this system that he runs to succeed, is that he needs competent post play. And that's just, that's not out there in abundance. You know what is out there in abundance? Shooting. You can always get shooters, but there was just never any value. There never seemed to be any value placed on shooting in this program. And that has really hampered the development of the offense. Like, because if you, in one respect, it's frankly amazing that they got their offense to be as good as they did. You know, this year is a perfect example where they were not a great offense, but given the way that they play and the personnel at hand, the fact that they got them to like a top 40 offense is pretty incredible.
Yeah, it really was. It said a lot to, like, just the type of people that he was able to bring in and, like, help mold. Which, I think that's something else that, like, really stood out. It's, like, how, like, you mentioned the bigs. And, like, he was really committed to playing bigs. Like, not just, like, stretch bigs, but, like, guys who, like, sat on the box. And, like, that meant, like, a lot of development for a lot of these younger guys and some of, like, the JUCOs. Like, everybody knows who we're talking about, like, throughout his history. And, like, there's been, like, a big difference between, like, his teams where they had, like, a star, like, a big guy who could just come in day one and play back to the basket, play offense, defense. Like, the two examples, like, Gary Clark and Yancey Gates. Like, two of the stars on those teams that ended up having, like, gigantic seasons. Because, like, when you, like, recruit the way he does, at least like the way he did at UC, where like you have like a lot of like raw guys you're trying to mold to play that type of game, it really kills your depth like, quite a bit until like those guys are comfortable like stepping into larger roles. Just like, I think it's like another one of the things that like about his tenure is they really never had any like pure depth outside of like having Cumberland and like Sean Kilpatrick come off the bench. I guess some of his like earlier teams, like, we were just, like, loaded with a lot of young guys. because they had to be. And like by the time like that class like of like Dixon and like Parker and like Kashmir, right, were all seniors. Like some of those guys were coming off the bench, like Rashad Bishop. But like that was like the one example. And like ever since then, like once you got the program on solid ground, it was like you had your developmental guys and your starters and like maybe like two or three guys that he really trusted. And that was it. Like you were like a 8 or 9 man team at best.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's the decision that Mick made in terms of going with developmental bigs frequently over the last 5 years. And like I get it. If you see someone who's got that potential, you think you can make into a serviceable player 2-3 years down the road, that's fine. There's no issues taking shots on those kind of players, but the real issue is you only got so many scholarships to give out. And if you have 3 of your slots taken by guys who are purely developmental, who might be competent players in 2 to 3 years, I mean, that hammers your depth. You just don't have it.
Yeah, like that was largely my point. It was like not a knock on any of the players, but it's like somebody like Sosume. And it's like they have him on the roster for what, like at least like 2 or 3 years now, and like, he's like really raw and like learning how to play at a high level. And like year one, like he was definitely not there. Like you can see like all the tools he has, but like he just hasn't put it all together consistently. And like seeing like him grow this year, and like, oh, he's like gets how to do this now. Like, oh, he's starting to learn this. It's like one like the reasons like why he like Mick recruits like that, but it also can be like one of the reasons why like your backup bigs are Rashawn Fredericks, and they still play 2 bigs, which is like more of like a scheme thing than anything. It's like his refusal just to play any type of small ball. Just really annoying over the last couple of years.
It's baffling. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, definitely not when he's had the rosters to do it. Because, like, they kind of did it, like, out of necessity sometimes this year, but they never really, like, stayed with it for long stretches. And, like, I said like, a couple weeks ago, the best team, like, he had, just results-wise, was that he had to play like Jaquan Parker at power forward. And like that team was 4 guards and whoever the big man was. And they went the furthest because like they like played really hard and were tough to match up against.
Yeah, and like the Jerron Cumberland is better suited to the Jaquan Parker role than Parker was. He's bigger, stronger.
Oh, yeah.
More physically capable of handling himself against power forwards. But, and there was ever an interest in playing that way. And I get, like, part of it is Jerron loved him to death, his defensive effort. It depends on the day. Some days his defensive effort is great, and other times it's not. And if you're going to play as a power forward at his size, your effort needs to be there every day. And it just wasn't. So, like, I get that part of it. But, so you can't play a traditional back-to-the-back basket, you know, focusing on defensive rebounding with that group, fine. That's your 5 best players. Like, just find your 5 best and run with them. You'll be surprised by the results.
Yeah. That's something I'm really interested to see, like, what he does at UCLA. Because do you think, like, something like there, he would have to play a bit differently? But maybe not. Maybe he just, like, takes the style and just runs it at UCLA. And if they get, like, higher profile, like, big men that are, like, actually good, maybe it works out better for him there. But, like, who knows? Like, the best big man he had at UC was, like, a 3-star recruit. And it was, like, Gary Clark, obviously.
Yeah, like, he'll get better talent at UCLA just because there's more talent in California than there is in the areas where he recruits. Yeah, here to UC. And it's UCLA. Like, let's just call it what it is. UCLA still is a name that carries cachet, even though they haven't really had the success that they are accustomed to and haven't really had a great team. And I mean, would you call the Lonzo Ball team a great team? No, I don't know about that. They were an exciting team, but they weren't particularly good or tough.
Yeah, they ended up like losing pretty emphatically in the Sweet 16, like when it came down to it. Yeah, I'd say that was more like an exciting team than a great team.
Yeah, I mean, like the culture shock that is going to be in place for both Mick and UCLA is going to be something to watch. Because it's like whatever they think they're getting, they're not really prepared for it.
Yeah, and like if just for like how that profile has been, or that not profile, how that school's been like the last decade, it's been like really interesting to like watch how they've tried to get back to where they were, like 2007, 2008, back to back Final Fours, and they've made the tournament what 1, 2, 3, 5 times since then, several way more than that. They've only made 2 Sweet 16s since then. And they pushed out like a coach who kind of runs like a similar thing, like in Ben Howland. Of like, you could say Cronin's like numbers outside of like the Final Four teams Howland had. Like Cronin's teams work a lot more consistently on both ends than Howland's teams were. Like Micken like get that consistency at UCLA. Which, like, they had, like, 0% of the time under, like, Steve Alford. Like, he could get them to be a contender. And, like, being a contender in, like, a Power 5 conference, especially, like, one at UCLA where all your games are always on TV. And, like, if you do well, you're a national name. So just, like, that-wise, that like, perception-wise, it's, like, going to be big for him.
Yeah, and like the reaction to UCLA fan to the reaction of UCLA fans to Mick Cronin's hiring has been mixed, would be polite. I mean, like they are not happy with the way their search panned out, and like they're getting a good coach, and I think they inherently know that, but the reaction is not like has been pretty resoundingly negative. So, like, he's going into a story situation at a program with a lot of resources, but it's not going to be all sunshine and unicorns. He's going to be in for a lot, like a high level of expectations. And the fact that a lot of people are particularly happy with him getting the job is not going to make that any easier.
Yeah, 100-day job search that ends with them hiring like their fifth choice, then who's like Mick Cronin, like the least sexiest name they offered the job to. You can understand why people would be pretty upset about that one, especially when like they start so high, like, oh, I'm gonna go after John Calipari first, that apparently like offer him a pay cut and then not pay Jimmy Dixon's buyout. Yeah, just a really bad situation for them.
Well, and the fact that it all played out publicly, it had something to do with the dissatisfaction with Mick on their end, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's like if we didn't know any of the candidates for, like, UCLA, and it was, like, a quiet job search that ended up with Mick Cronin, it would have been, like, a lot different public reception. Although it probably still would have been the same. Like, oh, the guy who only made one Sweet 16. But it wouldn't have been, like, oh, this is like our 100th choice to be head coach, and it's Mick Cronin.
Yeah, like, and I think he's gonna give UCLA some. What they need is structure, and Lord knows Mick is good at structure. But the real question is how does that play in the UCLA market? Like, and there were a lot of snarky comments about how Mick is the most anti Southern California person ever, and that's kind of hard to dispute that. Doesn't seem like a laid-back kind of guy. Not really his vibe. So, yeah, it's going to be fascinating to watch.
Especially, like, in the sense where, like, they recruit like maybe not so much more like one and done types outside of like the Lonzo Ball like team. But like they do get like a lot of the high profile guys that end up like going pro early. Like there's stars off of this year's team, like Chris Wilkes definitely went pro. So it would be like a little bit of like a rebuild era there. Like Jalen Hans went pro. But they have like Shaq's son going to UCLA, I think still. So like at least he'll be able to have Shaq root for his team.
Yeah, I mean, like UCLA can get players. There's no doubt about that. That's always been the case. They're still the premier name on the West Coast, even if Arizona and to a shocking degree Oregon have really kind of put a dent in that. It's still UCLA. There's still something different about them out there.
Yeah, it's the gigantic perk of playing in like Los Angeles and being LA's team, at least for basketball, for better or worse. But let's take a look at the flip side. And since we talked about a little bit what that means for you, UCLA, like what does this mean for UC? We've seen a couple of names like bandied about. Like the top name like on the list seems to be John Brandon from NKU, who did pretty well there. Like Nick Van Exel has been thrown out as a candidate. A lot of Mac McMahon from Murray State, to where Mick Cronin came from, and then like some weird names. Like some of the older like retread names like Rick Pitino for some reason and Thad Mata being thrown out there. Who is your number one on your list?
It's probably Brandon for me, just because like I was really impressed with NKU all year. And like I didn't see a ton of them, but I saw quite a bit of them because for whatever reason, the Horizon League's deal means that their games get on Fox Sports Ohio a lot. So I saw quite a bit of NKU, not just a couple of times that UC's played them while Brandon's been there. I like the way he approaches the game offensively. And I just think he's a good, solid tactical coach. And that is something that this program needs. Like, the foundation's there. Like, the question is, how do you take it to the next level? You take it to the next level by becoming a markedly better offensive team. And, you know, it's tough to evaluate his recruiting because recruiting for NKU is a vastly different experience than recruiting for Cincinnati. And that's going to be true of any of the guys that you take from the lower ranks, you know. It's just a different beast going from that level to this level. So like is not practical to evaluate their recruiting now based on what they've done at these kind of jobs. I'm more interested in how they approach the game tactically, what kind of structure they have, what their overall philosophy is in terms of player development, and what kind of player they're looking for, what kind of player will succeed under them. I think the key for this coaching search and what they're looking for is they have to find people who are much better at developing players offensively.
Yeah, that's the type of coach I'm really looking forward to UC getting. It's like somebody like that changes up their like profile offensively. They're coming right into the situation, like you have a stud who could be first team All-American if it like all goes the right way in Cumberland. Like you already have like one giant player to build off of for your first year. And Brandon seems like a pretty good coach. Like in the same vein as you, I've watched them play like, I don't know, like six times since he's been their head coach, and like three of them were their championship game in the Horizon League tournament. So, like, I don't have, like, a ton of experience, like, watching his teams. But, like, they were always seemed to be well-prepared because they won most of those games. And, like, even, like, with how they finished in their league, they dominated that league the last few years. And, like, that's something you like to see from some of these coaches. Is, like, they go out and, like, they dominate. And, like, his NKU teams were 90 and 96 in KenPom the last 2 years. Just pretty good for a Horizon League team.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, he built that program up after the transition from Division II. And, you know, he won 9 games the first year. And then he just ripped off 3 consecutive 20-win teams with a pretty significant roster turnover in that stretch. I think he has the strongest resume of anybody that's been bandied about. You know, the Patino thing is interesting, for lack of a better word. I don't think this is the kind of job for him. Frankly, I'm not sure that any job is the kind of job for him because he's almost 70.
Yeah, I wouldn't be really thrilled if they hired Rick Pitino.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's that's just asking for Tuberville syndrome all over again.
And plus, like, if you hire Pitino, like, you know exactly what you're gonna get, like, right off the bat in terms of the reaction to that hire. Like, it's gonna be really divisive, really fast. And, like, you take all the scrutiny that you get if you that's, like, who you hired. It's, like, out of, like, the name coaches that, like, thrown about, like, him and, like, Thad, like, you could definitely get Pitino for a lot less than you could get Thad Mata for. Like, if they were, like, interested in, like, keeping somebody, like, in the $2.5 million range, like, that would be, like, a big step up for John Brandon, but that would also probably be like a salary like Rick Pitino would just take to get back in the coaching game.
Well, who knows what he's making over in Greece? It's probably quite a lot.
Probably. But it's Greece.
Hey man, they're in the EuroLeague. And he's got SK on his team.
Yeah, like one of the weirdest teams. Like you could, like a Nick Kalathis and like that one other dude from Ohio State. What a weird team.
They're trying to win that EuroLeague, yo.
Nick Van Exel, like, it seemed like a lot of the fan base is, like, behind for, the reason he's Nick Van Exel. Now, what are your thoughts on that one?
I mean, like, I don't have any issues with it. Like, player development, you know, sophisticated offense, all that. Like, he's going to have the ability to bring that. But can he recruit? I mean, that's really what it comes down to. He's never coached at this level. He's always been in a professional assistant. And he's going to get an NBA head coaching job sooner or later. Like, he's on that track. I'd be interested to see what a Nick Van Exel program looks like, how it functions. But that's the biggest unknown, just because there's so little crossover between what a college head coach is and what an NBA assistant is. Like, there's very little overlap between those two skill sets.
If you were, like, one of the people who didn't like how Vandy hired Jerry Stackhouse, you probably wouldn't be on board for Nick Van Exel. At least you shouldn't be, just from, like, what you mentioned. Like, he hasn't coached anywhere. Like, he was an assistant at Texas Southern, but Texas Southern, that's no offense, they're not UC. Like, that's a completely different level. Like, being an NBA assistant is really impressive and really great, but, like, as you mentioned, like, having to recruit, just the grind of college basketball, it's something completely different. Like, you probably would rather take somebody who, like, had at least some knowledge of that world, but, like, Memphis hired Penny and, like, got the number one recruit in the nation. It's like, if Mick Cronin, or not Mick Cronin, but if Nick Van Exel knows, like, any top recruits that he could bring into Cincinnati, that it would be worth, like, a 3-year trial.
Yeah, and it's interesting to contrast Nick Van Exel with Penny, because Penny came about it from the completely different track. He didn't drop into college. He went up, because after he was done playing, he kind of bounced around, coached his AAU team, became a high school head coach, and then from there elevated to, elevated to Memphis. And that high school to college coach, that's a transition that is made relatively frequently. They don't generally go from high school head coach to coach of a program of Memphis's stature. Generally, there's like four steps in between, but like it's a known path. And it's a completely different one. And because you are in high school, you're kind of immersed in that high school basketball scene in a way that Nick Van Exel has not been. I mean, he hasn't coached in college since 2010. And as you said, even then it was at Texas Southern, which is not anybody's idea of college basketball power.
The fact he does want the job, I think says something. I think he should at least get an interview. Like, why not? What does it hurt? And Kenyon Martin, like, is stepping forward Nick Van Exel.
Well, you know, of course he's going to put Nick the Quick on his short list. I wouldn't be mad if Nick Van Exel got the job, but I would hope that he interviewed the hell out of the job. But there's no way for us to know that, because, you know, we're lowly fans. We're over here.
Yeah, they don't let us in the interviews yet, unfortunately. The internal candidate that the national people are saying, and some of the local people are saying, is Darren Savino. It seems like if I had to like make a list of like the likeliest candidates for like the head coaching job, I'd probably put him one and Brandon two. So I think you're at a weird spot with where you are now and like the cycle. It seems like it'd almost be like easier to promote from within. But it'd be like more like continuity from what we just had instead of like breaking off for somewhere else. So I'm not sure.
That's the thing. Like, continuity has its upsides and downsides, and you never really know what's going to happen. Like, you can go with a continuity hire, like Michigan State did 20 how many years ago was that? 21, 22, when they promoted Izzo from within, and that worked out great. But that's the exception. That is not the rule. And we don't, like, there's no, because of the way that the program is run, we have no idea what Darren Savino's basketball philosophy is. You know, because everything about the program was subsumed by Nick's general thoughts on things that, I don't even know what Darren Savino sounds like.
He had that half against South Florida where he was head coach. And they won, so he's almost 1-0 as head coach. Like, my biggest knock on him would be that he was like the number three guy for so long. It seems like if he ended up being like the top guy in the program, it'd almost be like a jarring change, just from that sense. Like, obviously he's been around UC like for like 10 years. He was behind Larry Davis on the coaching hierarchy until like this past season.
Yeah, and I just he is simultaneously the most known and unknown of the candidates, because we know him, he's been around forever, but we don't really know him because he's never really had an opportunity to make himself known.
Yeah, that's very true. Then, but the main thing we know about him is that he has the ties to the New York area, and he gets a lot of credit for hiring, or not hiring, but recruiting most of those New York guys.
Yeah, and that's fine, but like the dirty little secret is that New York basketball isn't what it was. Like, if you pull up the top 100 recruits from any year in the last 5 years, you'll see far more kids from Houston and Dallas and Atlanta than you will from New York. Because, there's no one reason for it. Like, there was a fascinating piece on The Ringer, I think, when they first launched, about how New York basketball isn't what it used to be. And one of the main theses of the piece was, it's not what it used to be because kids in the South, they embrace strength training at a much earlier age for basketball than they do in New York. In New York, because it's New York and it's limited space, like, you know, strength and conditioning isn't really a thing for New York basketball the way it is in the rest of the country. And the rest of the country is producing these far more physically developed players because of that than New York is.
It seemed like, for the most part, like, the New York, like, connection was a lot stronger, like, earlier in, like, the Nick Cornyn run. Obviously, they keep bringing in players from that area, like Keith Williams on this team, and, like, most famously, I'm blanking on his name.
The immortal Jermaine Lawrence?
Yes, Jermaine Lawrence. Who could forget his amazing run at UC? And Chuck Jermaine Sanders, I think, was a New York guy, wasn't he? Yes.
Yeah, he was. He went to Rice.
So, that would be a little bit interesting, especially as you mentioned, like, not just nationally, but, like, it seems like UC's recruiting has moved a lot more towards, like, that Texas, like, Florida, like, Louisiana area with, like, a lot of the players that they've recruited lately.
Well, I mean, just look at the NBA draft that's going to happen here in a couple of months. Your top two picks are going to come from tiny towns in South Carolina. And South Carolina, you know, has a really underrated history for producing great basketball players. You know, the next two on the line would be Kevin Durant and Ray Allen. But, like, it's an area that has produced high-level basketball players for a long time. But it's an area that is not known for that. It's known for football, you know, because Clemson and Carolina and the rest of it. But that, basically, if your state produces good football players, they're going to produce good basketball players because they all go to the gym together.
And if you're, like, you're a place known for, like, high-profile athletes, that draws a lot more high-profile athletes to that area. And we should use that, like, little, like, springboard of, like, Jay Morant to talk about Matt McMahon from Murray State, another, like, candidate who is getting some buzz. Like, what would your thoughts be on him? I think he's definitely the most unproven, like, candidate that they would be having, especially since, like, his rise was, like, tied to recruiting a really great player who carried that program for the last 2 years.
Yeah, like, I really like McMahon, honestly. Murray State's a really interesting job just because it is one of the premier launching pads that the sport offers. If you go back and look at their last five head coaches, all of them have been promoted, moved up to much bigger jobs. The track record of those jobs is kind of mixed, but, like, it's a definite stepping stone job where you can make an impact. And like, from a recruiting perspective, I'd be really intrigued to see what he does with UC's name and resources. You know, as an in-game tactician, he's fine. I like a lot of the stuff that Murray did, but what he was like, he was really good about building his scheme around the skills of his players. Like, the 1 year, 2-3 years ago, they shot a fuck ton of threes. Pardon my French. That's an official term. It's a fuck ton. They shot a lot of threes, and they shot them pretty well. And this year's group, with John Morant, not as heavy on the shooters, so they didn't shoot, like, at all. Like, they were in the bottom 150 in terms of 3-point attempts to field goal attempts, which is, you know, adjusting to your personnel. I mean, there's definitely some, I don't know about red flags, but there's definitely some questions that you would have about him going from that job to this job. But I think he's probably the most intriguing, highest upside guy among the, you know, the younger coaches.
I would say that as well. Like, I think Brandon would be a consistent guy. But I think Matt McMahon would be, like, the one where, like, you were really taking a swing at the fences. Because you would think, like, if he can find, like, more, like, diamond in the rough type guys like he did with, like, Morant, like, that just raises his profile significantly anyways, like, having a the number 2-3 pick in the draft. And it's like you mentioned, they really changed up, like, their philosophy the last couple of years. Like, just, like, I guess with how, like, he shaped that roster and, like, recruited. It's like first 2 years, like you mentioned, like, offensively, but defensively, they were absolutely terrible at giving up a ton of, like, threes. And, like, then their three-point defense went from 255 to 6-4. It's like he really figured out something there. And, like, their defense, like, wasn't, like, great by any means from, like, what we would expect. But for, like, a team like Murray State, like, their defense got a ton better a lot faster. And, like, he won, or at least had, like, a non-losing record in all four of his years there in conference, which I think is, like, pretty encouraging. Like, the same, like, logic with, like, behind Brandon, like, succeeding so well at NKU. It's like, if you win a conference, you're doing something right. It's like, these schools play, like, money games for a reason. Like, they just have to take some of their lumps. And it's, like, good to see, like, they had, like, a ton of success. Like, 16-2 the last 2 years. And 10-6 his first year. So I think if you went either one of those ways, I think you'd be fine.
Well, and that's, this kind of brings me to the last point I want to make about that. Like, the sky is falling reaction to losing Mick is baffling to me, because this, like, there's a lot to offer with this program. Like, not that there aren't limitations, there definitely are, because unless you're at one of the five jobs in the country where there are no limitations and you have no budget, there's limitations to every job. You know, like, it's, this is not inherent to UC. Like, there are limitations, yes, but there are also definite strengths. You know, you have a massive fan base. You have a brand new arena. Your training facilities are top notch. You play in a conference that is good and getting better pretty much every year. Like, those are all positive things that you can point to and say, like, you can come have success here. Like, UC can get a good coach. Like, I'm not that worried about it. Like, Mick was fine, but Mick was not what a lot of people made him out to be. He was never an elite coach. He was never one of the 10 best in the sport. Like, not even close. And, like, I don't expect the next guy to come in to be that. But, like, the lionizing of Mick for what he went through in the first couple of years in the program is something that I've never really, you know, understood. Like, he got a lot of credit in the first couple of years for taking on an impossible situation and doing miraculous things with it. Right? But, like, it's 13 years out. Like, this is as far away from that situation that he walked into as you can get. And, like, could it all go badly? Could the next person we hire become another Tony Yates? Sure, that could happen. But, like, there's a lot of opportunity here. And if they nail this hire, and Mike Bone has an exceptional history for coaching hires, let's just call it what it is, you know, like, I'm interested to see what they come up with. I want to see what they can do, because there's, like this idea that you can never do better than Mick Cronin, I just don't understand it.
I don't either. So we talked about this a lot a couple weeks ago. Like, the pre-crisis, like, UC and, like, where they are now. And, like, once, like, the UC got to the level where, like, they're hitting that tournament every year, like, the results, like, were there in the regular season for the most part. And they just weren't there in the tournament. Like, they kind of, like, plateaued almost. And then, like, they had a really, really high peak that ended in, like, the most miserable way possible. Like, having, like, your two best teams, like, your two 31 teams, like, one of them was a 6 seed and, like, obviously wasn't projected to go very far. Like, then they lost in the second round. And last year's team, like, lost in the second round as a 2 seed. Like, stuff like that, like, really just follows you. And I think, like, perception-wise, like, he's obviously regarded as a good coach because he is a good coach. But I think, like, there's just something with, like, where UC was now, where, like, something, like, had to change. And I think Mick seemed like he felt the same way since he went to UCLA. But it's just really interesting to see, like, where they go now. Because I think they're, like, he left the program in great shape. Like, it's not like a Tuberville situation where, like, there's nothing there. Like, Mick Cronin did, like, a hell of a job. And unlike when, like, they had the Huggins fired, like, they were able to recruit this year. And they have, like, players potentially coming in unless they back out for some reason. So, like, the program won't fall to, like, the where they're 11 and 19 the very next year. Or the year after the head coach gets fired. So I think they should be in pretty good shape. Like, will they be in, like, the shape they are now? Like, I don't know. It's kind of hard to say. Just because we don't know who they're going to get. And, like, if some that person can step into the challenge and get this program to stay on top of the American Conference. Because we've never known a UC team that was, like, sitting down in the standings. They've been near the top every single year. Their worst finish was third. It's like, if they have, like, any type of finish where, like, they're, like, fourth or fifth, there's going to be, like, a lot of hand-wringing, of course. Like, if they made the right hire. Like, you have to keep the faith. And I believe that they can get, like, the right coach. Even if, like, it is, like, promoting Savino. I think you, like, that's a chance you just have to take.
Yeah, and, like, one thing that hasn't been talked about much in this transition is, like, this doesn't happen at UC often. UC coaches either get fired for lack of performance or they start a war with a university president. Those are the two outs. Getting hired away to a different program doesn't happen often. And, like, you can go back and look through all the eras. Those are the two ways. Like, you get fired or you're Bob Huggins and you get a fight with Nancy Zimpher. That's how all the coaches prior to this, going back to George Smith, who just said, I'm good, I'll retire now. That's how they all went. It's so, like, having a coach hired away because hired away, period, just is a very rare thing at UC.
Exactly. That's like their history of coaches is that cannot really not really that extensive lately. Like, Andy Kennedy is, like, 1 year is the outlier. They've had three coaches since, what, like, 1989.
Yeah, that's a long run.
They can hopefully, like, you find somebody who keeps the program, like, stable. But, like, what we just saw with the football program, it's like if they make a misstep with their hire, like, this administration doesn't seem like they'll, like, really worry too much about, like, pulling the trigger and get somebody else in there.
No, I don't think there's any bones about that. If they think they need to make a change to get the right person in, they will, no doubt.
Where do you think this leaves UC in, like, the greater conference picture? So we've talked about how the conference has shaped up and how it seems like you're going to get a giant push from like Memphis to be near like a top 25 team. But they're going to be very nationally relevant, at least for November. Houston is like almost in every single preseason top 25 list. UC was like on like half of the ones I saw, but that was contingent on Mick staying. So like they're like a borderline top 25 team. Like UCF like loses a lot. Like their three best players are all gone. Like Temple's under a change. Like Wichita State just had like a great close to their season. Like UConn has like a really top recruiting class coming in, but they were under 500. Like, where do you think like this leaves the Bearcats? Do you think they're still at the top of the conference, or do you think like they're like there's potential for them to slip a little bit?
I think the potential for them to slip is there. Like, there's no doubt about it. But that was going to be the case if Mick came back. Just because like the margins for this team were really thin. And then they got the better of them this year, but there's no guarantee that repeats in year two. So, I mean, like, I'd like to say that they're going to still be, you know, competing for the conference title, and with the right coach, they will be. But I think the non-conference season is going to be a rough one.
That's my biggest concern as well. It's like, once you get into conference play, like, some of the teams that suck are still going to suck. Like, Tulane, like, I know they hired, like, Ron Hunter. They won't be 4-27. But they're not going to be good. Like, East Carolina is still a ways away. I don't think SMU is, like, on the right trajectory. But, like, they're an example of, like, what can happen when, like, your head coach leaves. And, like, some of your major players leave. Like, you can hit like a little bumpy patch. Like a couple years ago, like everybody's like, "Oh, Jankovic, what a coach!" And now, like after like back-to-back 6-12 seasons, like there was like some push to get him like fired this offseason, which they haven't done yet. He's still there. So, like if you like make a smart move, it can like take a little transition. But I think having just Cumberland come back, like, for one, is, like, just so huge for the new coach. It'd be, like, the recruiting class after this where, like, they really have to make their mark. Because then after this, like, you lose almost every other key contributor off the roster.
Well, in the next recruiting class, they have three available scholarships. So they got a lot to play with. And it could be four if they don't take another in this class.
That's going to be, like, another, like, a little interesting twist. So whoever that coach is going to have to come in and try to lock down the class pretty quick and try to keep some of these guys from, like, having wandering eyes.
Yeah, I mean, and that's why they're trying to move so quickly with this group, just because, I mean, like, Samari Curtis is well within his rights to ask for a release from his LOI. And that has been granted in the past. I don't know if it will, you know, in this case, but it's not unheard of in this scenario for him to get his release. And that would be a blow, because that puts you at zero recruits for this class. And your next signing day is coming up in a couple weeks. So that's kind of a problem. So yeah, they got to move quickly.
Yeah, definitely. Like, quickly and thoroughly with like their coaching search. You would think they would be somewhat prepared for this. Like, you'd have to have like one hand in like the coaching search pool and like the other hand in like, "We want to extend Mick." You couldn't just like bank on one. Like, not that with like how much he was like thrown around for the Virginia Tech job as well. So it wasn't just UCLA. Was that in Virginia Tech? Like, he was like going to leverage you somewhere.
Yeah, and like it's professional malpractice as an athletic director if you do not have a list of names of coaches for this scenario exactly. Like, and it should be home constantly. Mike Bone's really good. Like, I don't have any doubts about that.
Yeah. So before we sign off, rank the candidates from, we'll just say, McMahon, retread, old coach, which would be Thad, Pitino, and Nick Van Exel, and Savino. Those out of those five, where do you lean?
Are you asking who I think should get the job or who I want to get the job?
Yeah. Ooh, let's do both. Who do you think will get the job? And I'll give my opinion then. Who do you want to get the job?
All right. So who I want to get the job is Matt McMahon. Just because I think the upside is higher. And then if you want an order after that, it would be Brennan, then Savino, then Thad, then Pitino.
No Van Exel on your list?
No, just too many. Like, there's too much writing on this. I don't want to risk it with the first timer.
Yeah, fair enough. I think we're in the same boat. McMahon would be my number one. Then Brandon. Then I would have Van Exel, because why not? Try to make that splashy hire. Then Savino. And then, I don't know. I think ideally, like, if Thad was, like, really going to be committed, he would be my number one if I thought they would pay Thad Mata. So I think he's probably, the best. Well, like, Rick Pitino is a Hall of Fame coach. If there's so much baggage with him, I wouldn't have him high on the list. Like, I would have Thad, like, ideally number one, and then McMahon number two, but number one in, like, the realistic category.
Yeah, I don't think this job needs a retread is really where I come down. I think they need somebody who's going to revitalize the program because it is stagnated for the last couple of years. It just has. And a new voice, a more excited voice, somebody who's actually willing to sell the program would be nice. And I'm not sure that's either of the retreads or Van Exel, because I don't know if Nick really knows what it's going to take in terms of building a presence, you know, online with social media, because that is a huge part of recruiting now.
That's a very fair point. I think where I would lean with, like, that is, I'm in the camp that, like, he really shouldn't have been pushed out of Ohio State. Like, obviously, it worked out well for them because Holtman's a great coach. Like, his health also, like, would worry me, like, quite a bit. Just because we know he has, like, known back issues. And it's like, God forbid, like, something happened to him where, like, he had to have some type of surgery or just, like, couldn't be on the bench for a while. That'd be, like, a pretty huge blow. Like, he has major drawbacks on his own. And plus, like, he, like, doesn't need the money. Like, if you had to pay.
Well, that's the thing. Like, he's comfortable. He lives in Indy. He's very comfortable. His daughter's going to school at Butler, or was. Like, what's he getting into it for? What's he trying to prove?
Exactly. Like, what would be, like, his end game? Like, would he be at Cincinnati forever? Would he, like, he try to, like, spin to, like another, like, Power 5 job? Another Big Ten job. Because he would have his, like, own question marks. Because that would make me a little bit wary about him. Like, you could say that about, like, all the young coaches, like we mentioned. Well, not young, but the newer coaches we mentioned. But it just happens with the newer coaches sometimes. Like, who do you want to get the job? Is it McMahon? Is he at the top of your list on both lists?
Yeah, he's at the top of my list.
Yeah, he's at the top of mine, too. Although, I don't know. I just can't. Maybe it's just me. I just can't really get that excited about Brandon. Maybe because it just seems like, oh, he did well at the school we played at last year. Like, we should hire that guy.
No, he's not a splashy coach. Like, he seems to have a pretty dry sense, you know, personality and sense of humor, which will play. Like, I think he's a good coach, but I just don't think the upside is there.
I don't really either. And, like, the fact that everybody's like, oh, this is the no-brainer hire. Like, this is what you should do. That always rubs me the wrong way, unless it's, like, somebody, like, amazing sitting there. Like, Braden was, like, bandied about for the Alabama job. But who knows? Do you have anything else you want to say before we wrap up this edition of the podcast?
Thanks for everything, Mick. I wish you luck.